Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan with you until 6:30, brought to you today and every day by the law firm Kondori & Murad.
Grant and Danny is exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Kondori & Murad, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
It is time for the Beltway Blitz. We'll cover the Commanders, the NFL, and the Nationals. Let's get it started right now. Mark Zuckerman, MassinSports.com to kick things off on the diamond. Speaking of kicks, my goodness, did the Nats get kicked in over the weekend. I know the Brewers are good, Mark. That was about as bad a home series as I can remember in the 13 years since the Nats made their first playoff berth back in 2012.
Yeah, I agree with you, Grant. It was ugly. It never really felt like they had much of a chance in any of these games. And deep down, you felt like even if it was relatively close, going into the latter half of the game, once that bullpen gate swung open and take your pick of whoever it was that was going to come in, there was just very little reason to think that they were going to get the job done. And I hope this is the extreme example of this because of how good the opponent was. Hopefully the next 3 days against the A's, it's a little better than that. But I do worry that this is going to be a recurring theme over the final 2 months of the season where because of the shaky state of the bullpen to begin with, and then the fact that you traded probably your only three really reliable arms at the deadline, it's going to be a real challenge to close out any kind of game over the rest of the season.
Zuck, when will we see Dylan Cruz back?
I think we're getting close. I keep trying to predict this, and I'm proven wrong. They are taking it slow. He played six innings the last couple of days with Rochester. He homered last night. That's great. You know, all the signs there are good, but clearly you need to get him up to nine innings, probably playing that back-to-back days before you're 100% confident. So I don't think we're going to see him in this series. Maybe he's ready for the West Coast trip to San Francisco over the weekend. Maybe they want to give him a little more time than that. I understand everybody wants to see him back. I want to see him back. He's one of the things to actually be excited about the rest of the season. But at this stage, given the state of the team, there's really no reason to force that issue. You make sure that he's 100% good to go. And not just healthy, but you know, has a little bit of a sense of timing at the plate. You know, he missed more than 2 months, so you don't just want to throw him to the wolves unless he's had a chance to get his at-bats in again.
Mark, James Wood was playing at a level where he was top five in the entire sport in OPS. And so even with this month where he hasn't hit, his numbers are still, you know, that of someone who is going to go on to have what would be considered as an outstanding season. So I want to get that out of the way. But I do want to acknowledge it's a 119 average now for a calendar month, and I wouldn't have thought he was even capable of a rut this long, this bad. What have you seen as now over basically 1 month? I mean, he's had a really hard time hitting the baseball.
Yeah, no, that's the troubling part. You knew he wasn't going to necessarily keep it up for a whole season of, you know, like a 900 OPS every single month. But you hope that the slump, if it was that, would maybe be in the 600s or 700s. And instead, this one had been in the 500s. What's happened? We already know he didn't get a lot of fastballs to begin with when he was going well. Well, he's hardly getting any now, and the reason is because he's not hitting them at all. There was a stat on the Apple TV broadcast the other night. He was 1-for-42 on non-fastball since July 4th. And you can see that with your own eyes. He opens up his front shoulder, his front hip. He's not staying on those pitches and driving them to left field, left center field, the way that he did so well the first half of the season. Now, he's too good. He works too hard. He cares too much to think that that's going to last forever. But it is something he's got to work himself out of because he's not going to get fastballs. He's not going to get a chance to hit, you know, good pitches until he shows he can do that again. And for the first time in his career, this is a legit slump that he's got to learn how to get himself out of.
Mark, appreciate the time, man. And hopefully we get to see some wins against the A's.
Okay, you got it, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, we'll see you at the ballpark tomorrow. There's Mark Zuckerman. Check him out, MassinSports.com, hopping on the Beltway Blitz. Let's talk football. Begin with a workout for the Chargers and a possible reunion. The Chargers worked out wide receiver Keenan Allen. Head coach Jim Harbaugh saying the workout went well. I'd be intrigued by this. Allen's the biggest name, most accomplished wide receiver available on the market. I think the Chargers albeit in a loaded division with the Chiefs and the Broncos as playoff teams last year, have a chance to make some noise again this season. They drafted Trey Harris in the second round. Quentin Johnson's been a bit of a bust for them. Ladd McConkey's awesome, but isn't practicing, isn't completely healthy right now. That'd be a pretty cool reunion. Keenan Allen back to the Chargers with Justin Herbert.
I thought he was going to be awesome with Chicago last year, and just everything kind of fell off. So I'd be interested to see what kind of role he would play, because he's been the quintessential slot guy throughout his career, and Ladd McConkey's kind of taken over that role. But I think it'd be an intriguing offense, and they're a team that they're going to live on running the football. That's kind of what Jim Harbaugh does, and they've got plenty of backs to do so. I'm really intrigued by the rookie Amarion Hampton. But if you bring in another Keenan Allen, another security blanket type of guy, I can never hurt a guy like Justin Herbert, so that'd be intriguing, and I think it makes the most sense, honestly, just him going back to the Chargers. It feels right.
I hate to make everything about Terry McLaurin at the receiver position, but he was 32 last year when he kind of ran into a wall, seemingly. That is definitely what Peters...
Do you think
he
ran into a wall, or do you think Caleb Williams was the wall?
It's a good question. I think both are probably factors. I didn't think Keenan Allen was the same player last year. They also weren't getting the ball as probably effectively and easily as they could have. Let's go to Browns camp. Dylan Gabriel has really struggled at quarterback. He's completing about 50% of his passes in team drills, according to the folks that track that all camp long, which I think's kind of ridiculous.
Could you imagine if we were doing that, by the way?
No.
I'm so glad we're not doing that. Well, we're going every completion and attempt, 7-on-7, 11, everything.
When you have five quarterbacks and no real depth chart and no one knows who's going to make the team, I mean, you need all the information you can get. I just think it's a foolish exercise.
100%.
Like, silly.
Because there's no context. Because what if Dylan Gabriel's going against the ones and Shador's going against the threes, which, by the way, I still don't know how Shador ended up in the fifth. They drafted him after they drafted Dylan Gabriel. And Gabriel, to me, is the quintessential backup quarterback in the league. I don't know.
Yeah, Gabriel, from a physical standpoint, I could tell you how he ended up in the third. He lacks some NFL skills.
Yeah.
But the Shador thing is mostly just... The quarterback position is almost, according to the teams, I think, like 75% not the physical stuff. And that's all the stuff that people are petrified about. But he's had a better camp statistically, for what it's worth, so far. But to the story, and the reason of bringing up the Browns here, Dylan Gabriel is going to be limited moving forward for at least a few days with hamstring tightness. So here's your opportunity if you're Shador Sanders. You know, Sanders has had arm problems in his own right, but he's back at practice. And so now Joe Flacco is projected to be their number one, is the guy. Kenny Pickett has missed time with an injury. Shador could be the great beneficiary here and try to fight his way onto the roster.
What do you think they ultimately do at quarterback? Because I've seen reports that they maybe want to move one of those guys. Who's starting? Who finishes the year? That quarterback situation is just chaos.
I think Flacco is the starter. I think Dylan Gabriel's on the roster with Pickett, and I think Shador Sanders is on the practice squad.
Don't you think someone's going to pick him up then?
No.
Really?
I don't. I mean, they had four rounds to draft him. Now you're going to cut a guy you just spent a whole camp with. You have a Shador Sanders in your building already. And by the way, if they
do you not think Shador is starting caliber in the league in terms of, like, as a quarterback, as a rookie, like, he can get to that point?
Yeah, I think he's physically capable of it. But again, that's the reason he went where he did in the draft, is because that's secondary to all the other stuff you have to deal
with. True.
Which hasn't really changed. I mean, the guy's gotten in trouble a couple of times for, you know, speeding and all the other, like, his judgment since he got drafted has been no better than the fear, I would say.
I think their best quarterback, aside from the age of Joe Flacco, is Shador Sanders.
That I would disagree with. I mean, maybe from a physical tool standpoint.
No, I literally.
If that's all you're talking about.
I think if they were to start and they want to win the most games, probably Flacco, second, Shador.
I think a lot of teams disagree with you, as evidenced by Gabriel getting drafted ahead of him and Shador being bypassed round after round after round. All right, let's keep the blitz moving and talk about the local outfit. Adam Kilgore, who's been at training camp day in and day out. That's right, Adam, back on the Commanders beat where we love to see you. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It only took me 2 hours to get home. Good day in the Beltway.
Oh, Jesus. That's... I mean, as if you weren't already ready to get off that beat. Now I think there's even more reason. All right, a lot to get into. You and I were talking about Jalen Lane on the practice field today. He was kind of one of my standouts over the last few days that we've talked about as someone to watch in the preseason. What do you see when you watch the Tech product?
I see a guy who looks more like a 5-6 year veteran than a rookie. To me, he's been, with Terry McLaurin out, he's, to me, been the second best receiver on the field day in, day out behind Deebo Samuel. Runs like the whole route tree. He just, you know, look, I mean, it's training camp. You don't want to like get over your skis. You don't know what the defense is trying to accomplish. You don't know what the situation is. You don't know what coaches are calling, et cetera, et cetera. But Jalen Lane, every single day, he's always open. The quarterback throws him the ball and he catches the ball. Like, you know, that is undeniable. And so, yeah, to me, he's been one of the real standout players of camp who, you know, you might not have known much about or expected much from, but man, he just pops like every single day.
When you look at the DBs, I thought Trey Amos had a really good day today, but I think overall the DBs have been impressive throughout camp. Do you think that's a product of them being really, really good and we can expect great things from them, or the fact that Terry McLaurin's not at practice and they're going up against some other guys that are a little down the depth chart?
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what they do against New England, even though the Patriots don't have like the you know, most sort of eye-popping set of receivers. But, you know, I think it's a great question. I do think they added a lot. You know, if a guy like Jonathan Jones, who's been in New England and can play a lot of different roles, if he's like your third or fourth cornerback, that's a really good sign for your cornerback room. You know, Marshon Lattimore, I would say he's had like the best training camp, but he's out there, he's healthier, he's sort of getting up to speed with the system. He hasn't been bad. You know, he hasn't looked like an all-pro, which is what he once was. I think it's a really promising group of cornerbacks. I think there's a lot of depth and a lot of different things they can do. You know, Mikey Sanders still, you know, he still gets his hands on the ball like every single practice. They've got a lot of different kinds of players in the back end. I think it's going to, you know, be really a big benefit for them throughout the year.
Adam Kilgore covering the Commanders for the Washington Post. You know, you've traveled the league and covered so many teams in so many sports. I'm curious just for your perspective on the vibes and just, you know, the togetherness of the group. Like, I watch these videos from around the NFL of these fights where, you know, guys are running off the sideline. We haven't seen anything like that. I'm not suggesting that means that the team isn't together, but it just seems like Dan Quinn runs a really efficient training camp. What have been your thoughts being around the team here over the last couple of weeks about how they operate as a culture?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think two things come to mind. The first word is professional. There's a lot of, or, you know, they get like a lot of work in a short period of time. It's productive. Dan Quinn like really knows what he wants to do and does it efficiently. Number two is there is a really cool and interesting sort of player-to-player mentorship that's happening with the Commanders that stands out once you're around day after day. Really, you look at like every position group. There's a guy who's been in the league for 6, 7, 8, 12 years. That's almost like a, you know, it would be an insult to say they're like a coach in the field or something, because there's, you know, in most cases still very good players. But like, you know, you got Von Miller basically putting on like pass rushing seminars in the linebacker and DN room. You've got Zach Ertz, who's, you know, by example on the side field, showing everybody how you play 10 years in the NFL at a high level. You know, during special team periods, he's like catching balls and working on his releases. You know, like he's trying to impress the coach and get the last roster spot. There's a lot of like player to player teaching and learning that's happening with the Commanders that I'm sure happens everywhere, but it's like a neon blinking sign at this camp. Just the way the roster's constructed and the kind of people and players that they've acquired.
What do you make of the running back room with Ja'Cory Crosby-Merritt being kind of the big talk of training camp, but Brian Robinson's still there, Austin Eckler has had a good camp. What do you make of that room, and how do you think that plays out as the season goes on?
Yeah, you know, I mean, coaches are always going to fall back on guys that they trust, especially at that position. And it's not things like, you know, who makes the coolest cut in training camp. It's like who can protect the passer on third down. And so from that standpoint, you know, I think Brian Robinson and Austin Eckler and even Jeremy McNichols behind them are more bankable as far as guys that you're likely to see, especially early in the season. You know, there's no doubt that Bill Merritt has got a lot of gas to his game. Like, he is pretty electric. You know, you watch his college highlights, you watch the way he gets in and out of cuts in training camp practices, and there's definitely something there. But he's going to have to show a lot more, you know, in these joint practices and preseason games. You know, I do think I would be willing to bet he makes the team. just because a guy like that, you know, a rookie contract, you know, how the finances all work, he's probably not going to survive trying to sneak him onto the practice squad. And so that, I think, gives him a really good chance to earn a spot so long as he is, like, you know, competent with, like, special teams, pass pro, all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, no, he's definitely, you know, if you're an alien walking off the street and watching the team practice, he's the guy that catches your eye for sure.
Adam Kilgore, Washington Post on our Beltway Blitz. Two pieces you can check out from him today. Wrote about Laramie Tunsil's decade in the league and the fact that he's become the consummate pro. And then also the way Deebo Samuel's being used and what could lie ahead for him. Of those two guys who you put pen to paper on, Tunsil and Deebo, the big offseason additions on offense, who do you think's more important to them this year?
Well, I think you got to go with, you know, posing it that way, I think you got to go with Tunsil. I mean, he's protecting the blind side of the franchise, right? So, you know, I think to me, he's the guy who, you know, if they had to choose one of those guys to have a great season, I think Tunsil is the one. And, you know, he's just like a really impressive dude. You know, I think like the trade happens in the offseason and, you know, you sort of could try to contextualize it and think about who he is as a player. You're like, well, he's getting a little older. He's 31 now. You know, he had a lot of penalties last year. The Texans gave him a million sacks. Like, what are you getting? And then, like, you see him on the field, and you're like, oh, yeah, like, that's an NFL left tackle. Like, that. There's not six guys like him in the NFL. He's just a massive human who moves incredibly gracefully. And he's, you know, very quickly fitting well into a pretty tight-knit offensive line. You know, it really stands out. Like, you know, everybody you ask about him is like, man, this guy's the man. Like, you know, he took Josh Connerly and Brandon Coleman to his, like, personal coach in Auburn for a week between OTAs and training camp just to get to know him, just to show them how a 10-year veteran, you know, keeps an off-season routine. And so, yeah, I think he's been – everything they wanted and more. It's August 4th, so we'll see how the season goes. But, I mean, I think he's, like, just, like, been an exceptional sort of add in every way. He's been given the chance in an offseason.
Adam, appreciate the time. We'll chat again soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Be good. There's Adam Kilgore of the Washington Post on our Beltway Blitz. All of our training camp coverage on 106.7 The Fan is presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com. Your clear home improvement choice. You just heard Toby Altizer's voice. He is in for Danny Ruye today. I'm Grant Paulson on GND. Next, I want to get into the shifting tide nationally, it seems like, on Adam Peters digging in this stare down with Terry McLaurin. We'll explain on The Fan. GND, welcome back. You're listening to The Fan. Kane Medrano, linebacker, sixth-round pick by the Commanders out of UCLA, on the show at 6 o'clock this evening. I want to get into this changing of the guard a bit in how the national media is talking about Adam Peters and the Commanders' stance on the Terry McLaurin negotiation. So the first audio clip here, this one's a little bit longer, so we'll have to jump in and kind of read and react here a bit. But this is Chris Canty of ESPN Radio and Television talking about what the team and what Peters are doing with McLaurin. Give this a listen.
It makes no sense to me. This is a guy that, from a culture standpoint, embodies everything you want your program to be about. I don't understand why you don't want to pay this guy. See, sometimes these organizations, these front offices, they can operate in these negotiations with a tad bit of hubris. And it feels like that's what's happening with Adam Peters right now. Sometimes the worst thing that can happen to you in sports and in life is to have success early on because you think you know it all. And you try to hardline every single negotiation. You try to win every deal. Here's the thing that every successful business person knows. You can't win every deal. Every contract negotiation ain't gonna be a deal. Sometimes it's just getting the contract signed. And in this instance, that's exactly what needs to happen with Terry McLaurin because he means so much to Jaden Daniels' development. I don't understand why the Washington Commanders are taking this approach with somebody that from a locker room chemistry standpoint, from an on-field production standpoint, brings everything you want to the table. If Adam Peters is willing to do this to Terry McLaurin, then he's willing to do it to anybody in that Commander's locker room. And that might be one of the worst messages you could be sending to the rest of the guys that are involved in your program after having so much success early on.
So that's a powerful comment from a guy who played league for a long, long time. Specifically at the end there, where he says, if you're willing to do this to Terry McLaurin, you are willing to do this to anybody. And I do think that is the message that they're sending, maybe strategically, but the former player Canty is saying that's a terrible message to send in the dressing room.
Yeah, I think on both sides you can see this. One, the audio we're going to play is both coming from former players, so they're always going to side with the player getting the money. That's just naturally going to be the case of things. But also, they are sending that message strategically so that everyone knows that when you go into negotiations, you're not just going to walk in here and get the biggest number possible. Like, if you're willing to do it to Terry, that means I'm willing to do it with Mikey Sanders still. I'm willing to do it with Quan Martin. I'm willing to do it with everybody because I was willing to do it with the star of the team. So
he's saying it as if they're sending a really, they're sending a message and it's terrible. And Adam Peters might be going, we're sending a message and it's great.
Yeah, like they're looking at it from both sides. And whether you like it or not, I think it's pretty clear that they wanted to send that message. We're willing to do hard business. And like the 49ers have always gotten it done. But that's become their MO, right? That it's always going to be something that is not going to go as smooth as some other organizations, but they get the deal that they like or closer to the deal that they like. They're not going to overpay, whatever it may be, but that's how it is.
But what I don't like about that, you're right, that is the way they do business in San Fran. See Debo, see Ayuk, see Brandon Ayuk, rather, see Williams, see Bosa. There is this culture of frustration with the team. Now, it generally does not trickle over to like being mad at Kyle Shanahan or the coaching staff or whatever, but there's this culture of animus, essentially, where now it's Juwan Jennings' turn, and it's constantly rotating. There's always a guy who's at odds with the team or two, someone missing practice, and I don't think it helps. I mean, they haven't won anything. Like, they've been close. They've knocked at the door, but I do wonder if that's the best practice. I would venture to say that it's not. My point all along has been that I don't know that this is really about message sending. Like, I know that's Canty's point. You and I tend to think Peters is certainly showing this is how we're going to negotiate because it's the first time he's been able to do this. But I'm not convinced of that. I think it might just be every situation's different, and this is about Terry McLaurin's age. That if Terry McLaurin was 2 years younger, let's just say he was DK Metcalf, came into the league, played the 6 years, wanted his new contract, and instead of being 29 as we talk today, Terry McLaurin was 27, I think they would have had a deal done 2 months ago. I don't think this is about trying to get every penny or winning every deal. I think this is quite literally a disagreement on, at Terry's age, he is about to slow down, and McLaurin and the agent don't view it that way. They're saying, I'm going into years 7, 8, and 9. But I constantly find myself thinking about the player perspective here. All the players are buddies with McLaurin. They're talking to him every single day. They're going to side with him over Peters. If they just dismiss this as business and roll their eyes, then no harm, no foul. But there is a chance that it does some damage to, it dents a little bit of this brotherhood, camaraderie. Sure. You know, we're all here as commanders. Like, part of the beauty of this brotherhood, Toby, is that from ownership, on down, Mitch Rails having lunch with these guys with Josh Harris and asking Jonathan Allen, like, what can we do for you? And John Allen's going, you know, I can't believe when my family's at the game, there's nowhere for my girlfriend to go do this in the second quarter, whatever. And he's like, no problem. And it's fixed next week. Like, this is how they've shown the players. And I know it's just business, but this could be a little bit of a dent in that just because it's McLaurin. If it was Quan Martin or Mikey Sanristil or any of the other guys you're talking about, it might not do any damage. But this is the one guy that it felt like when it's time for him to get paid, they'll say, how much do you want?
Yeah.
And I'm oversimplifying it. You can't just give him a bad contract. But over a few million dollars, this is worth it to them? I do wonder if that could do some damage in the locker room.
Yeah, and I think everything that you said is correct. I don't think that it is something that they went out of their way to send the message. I think that they truly are trying to do best by the team, best business. But I think what Chris Canty's talking about is what I was fearful of. You don't want to send that message that, hey, I'm willing to do this to Terry McLaurin, so I'm willing to do it to any of you. You want it to be, hey, we paid our guy, we'll take care of our people. And I just don't think it was worth the squeeze with Terry. Right? With anybody else, I think it's different. And like, we try to dismiss all the extra stuff and like, it's just about age. It's Terry, right? Like, you talk about other situations, like when Mikey Samra still comes up, right? Or, you know, Jaden's a totally different because he's the quarterback. Sure. But somebody else comes up for a contract, it's not Terry.
Tobes, I said it earlier. They signed 20 guys this offseason, or traded for them, or re-signed. 20. That's half almost of the 53-man roster that are either going to turn 30 or are already 30. And this is the time where age all of a sudden matters. Now, they didn't give anybody the contract McLaurin wants, and I understand it's not six and one half dozen in the other. It's not apples to apples. But the point is the point, which is they have not had a huge problem with age, and all of a sudden now when it's time for Terry to get his bag, they go, oh, you're too old. Not to mention, he just watched you trade for Deebo Samuel.
That's
who
another
isn't
point.
Durable, who isn't a guy that has ever bled or sweat here, and you got no problem paying him what you pay Terry McLaurin.
And that's another point that I think has to be factored in here, is think about your Terry's camp, right? You bring in another guy, you just traded for him. Now, you didn't give up significant capital, but you gave up a fifth rounder for him, so you did go get him. If I'm Terry, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, sweet, we're going to have a good offense, they'll pay me. But as time goes on, I'm thinking, they're not getting to my number. Are they really going to keep this guy? Is that really their plan? They better pay me.
You mean, let me clarify. You mean that they would re-sign
him
and extend Deebo.
Yeah, and thinking, oh, he's going to be the guy when I've been around here. And so people are saying, oh, he's going to take the discount and he, you know, what? Terry is going to cash in one last time. It's this contract. And maybe he would have been willing to go to a different, I don't know how much the Deebo situation plays in there, but I just don't understand why they chose to take this stance with Terry, like you said, over a couple of million dollars. And, you know, if it's something where Terry's asking for 35, okay, then we can have a more real discussion. I don't think he is asking for that. I know the report was significantly more or something like that. If you listen to the verbiage from Schefter, he says, I think, and who knows if that's a report or if that's speculation.
For over 35.
So to me, if they were to get somewhere in that 30, 31, 32 range, they'll get it figured out. If the Commanders are up to, what was the report? I forget who it was from, saying that he got up to 27. Then what are we doing? Just get to the 30, do it, figure out the guarantees.
That's my point. When you're not paying your quarterback, when the cap is this huge, a couple million dollars is not that big of a deal. And I understand the logic from Peters might be, it's a bad contract to give him, fill in the blank. It's a bad business move. And to that I would say, I go back to what Chris Canty just said, actually. The line he used was, you can't win every deal. Sometimes you may lose, I'm paraphrasing, but sometimes you may lose the deal a little bit for the grand scheme of the organization. I think it's worth a $2.5 million commercial 100%. To say, do everything the right way for 6 years, we'll take care of you. That's worth $3 million overpay.
And part of the reason you bring in the guys, the quality of the people, not necessarily the player, but the quality of the people that you've brought into this organization is they can understand things, right? They're people. They're not just robots. You think when one of these guys comes up, they won't realize, like, yeah, maybe they overpaid a little bit for Terry, but that's Terry. That's Terry.
Right, and that's Danny will frequently say, well, if you do it with him, now you got to do it next year with Luvu. That's not the case, by the way.
I think everyone understands that it's Terry and what Terry means. Like, I think you, the crazy part, and you brought this up, and it rings true in my head all the time. Jaden is probably getting to be the face of the franchise. Terry still is, in my mind. Maybe it's 1A, 1B with Jaden, but when you're at the playoff or the playoff clinching game against Atlanta, who are they chanting the name of? It's not Terry.
Right.
He's still the guy. Everybody loves this dude. Like, Jaden gets a big pop whenever he runs over from the other field. Who are they chanting the name of? They're chanting Terry's name. He's not even there at practice today.
Yeah, like, he's been the guy for the longest that I just is don't beloved.
I just don't think it was worth the squeeze on this one. And if they sign him pretty soon, I think we'll still just move on from this. But I don't love the fact that now we're having discussions about when do they have to get this done before it starts affecting week one. I don't want this affecting this year.
Well, they got to get moving here quick.
Exactly.
I mean, this week is still irrelevant in the big picture of preparing for week one. McLaurin wouldn't be playing in the preseason game. But I've kind of said all along, next week is the one I've circled where that's ramp-up time. You could get on a treadmill and run for 30 minutes without stopping and be in great shape. You got to play football to get ready for football. And so I think by the end of next week is kind of when you start to be uneasy as to, is he going to be himself when the season starts. We've got a clip I want to play next from Dan Orlovsky, the analyst, former quarterback at ESPN as well, talking about how Peters is handling Terry McLaurin. A little bit of a national shift, it feels like, in some of the coverage of them digging in. And want to get your reaction as well at 800-636-1067. Canty suggesting this is a bad message to send in the locker room, saying you can't try to win every single deal. This is not a time to try to get the best possible deal. This is the time to try to get a really important player under contract and in your building. Do you agree with that? And do you have any mounting frustration with the front office, or are you team Peters in that he is, if you just operate robotically, actually doing a pretty smart thing? You just got to take the emotions and the beloved player out of the equation. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Is the national tide turning on how the Commanders are handling Terry McLaurin? Welcome back, Grant and Danny without Danny today. Toby's in on the Fan. So you heard from Chris Canty. He suggested you don't get to win every single deal. He actually kind of went personal and said the worst thing that can happen is when you have a lot of success and you think you know everything. He's suggesting Adam Peters, based on getting to the NFC Championship game last year, is conducting himself this way with Terry McLaurin. I don't think that has anything to do with it. This is how he came up in San Francisco. This is how they did it with the 49ers. But this was Dan Orlovsky of ESPN talking about the McLaurin situation.
Respectfully, Washington, you were a dumpster fire for years. You were a laughingstock. The only thing good about your organization was that young man. Every year he did it, year after year after year, for like 5 or 6 years with disaster all around you. You were the only reason why anyone spoke somewhat positively about your organization. If you don't have them, you erase everything that you did last year. Everything that you did. And I'm being respectful to Dan Quinn and Adam Peters and what they did last year. You need him. There, give me receivers that impact winning. Impact winning as much or if not more than Terry McLaurin. I'll give you like Jamar. I'll give you like Jettis. Justin. Mm-hmm. Amon-Ra St. Brown, this guy, he impacts winning. This is a team that had 6 fourth-quarter comebacks, was ridiculous on fourth down. What are we doing in Washington? You finally have some good. And you finally have hope for
after
the future.
Year, yes.
And you're trying to take away the one thing in your organization that before Jaden and this group got there was good? It makes no sense.
So I think that's a little bit overstated, but I totally understand that argument. Like, that is that monologue of just the impassioned, why are we bringing this on ourselves? Mm-hmm. A fan screaming that is understandable to me. It's a self-inflicted wound. And Peters might say it's a worthwhile wound because we can't give him a contract that's going to look really, really bad in a year or two. And to that, I would say, reasonable point as well. But this idea of everything has been so good, everything has been harmonious and wonderful and first class, and it just feels like the ultimate well-run professional organization, and this self-inflicted disaster is taking away from that. Why is this happening? I get that impassioned monologue from Orlovsky. I want to point out some numbers. McLaurin's value to Jaden Daniels. This is via the Next Gen Stats, folks. Number 3 quarterback wide receiver duo in terms of EPA per attempt at .52. Only 2 duos, quarterback to receiver, better EPA per attempt last year. Number 6 quarterback receiver duo, total EPA, expected points added of 54.3. Number 2 in terms of tight window rate as a duo. Daniels fits a lot of ball into small windows out at these practices. Had a couple of balls batted or broken up, one pick today because Chris Moore in a small window had a ball plucked out of his hands. Jaden Daniels counts on Terry McLaurin in the middle of the field to make those plays. They do not have anybody on the team that will make those plays. Without Terry McLaurin, they are a lot worse, period. So we can have all the discussions we want to, all the dialogue that we want to have, Toby, about should they pay him? Is it an overpay? How much is he worth? The business element of this, here is the bottom line. If he's not out there happy playing good football A championship team in their wildest dreams has no chance at that. A playoff team becomes a fringe playoff team. A 12 or 13 win operation, if everything goes well, becomes, you know, 8 or 9 wins, probably 10 if everything goes perfectly and you play well on defense. Is the juice worth the squeeze? That's what I would keep asking Adam Peters if I'm Josh Harris. I want you to run the show. I'm not Dan Snydering you. I'm not telling you what to do. But I just want to remind you that Chris Moore and Luke McCaffrey are lining up at 1 and 2 for me right now. Is the juice still worth the squeeze? On August 4th, sure. On August 10th, maybe. I promise you on September 7th, the juice is no longer worth the squeeze. I promise you that. Because I got to beat the Giants, and to do that, Terry McLaurin's the best guy to help me.
If they don't get this deal with McLaurin done, you have to question everything they did this offseason, right? Because you're missing your biggest piece on offense outside of Jaden Daniels. Because getting Laremy Tunsil's great, right? Drafting Jalen Lane is great. But wouldn't you then need a number one? Would you rather take the $15 million a year that you gave to Kinlaw and maybe spend 10 on a defensive tackle and save that extra 5 to now go into McLaurin's contract the next couple of years? You have to look at everything.
You just said something I haven't even thought about. They overpaid Javon Kinlaw massively.
Thank you.
If we care so much about, like, we can't make a bad deal, we can't overpay, they gave him maybe $6 million more than anybody else was going
Correct.
To. Like, that contract still is jarring, and they go, oh, well, we know better than the other teams. Like, we like this guy. Just wait till you see it. Everybody was like, oh, my God, what an overpay. Now it's like you have to make every deal work? Now you can't overpay anyone?
The point you've made about the rookie quarterback is the best one. Because if this were a case where Jaden was making whatever the quarterbacks are making by the time he gets paid, $70 million a year, potentially, then yeah, we have this discussion. They do need to penny pinch a little bit. The whole point of Jaden being on the rookie contract is now's not the time to penny pinch. Especially with your number one wide receiver, who, by the way, helps out your quarterback. I don't understand why we got to this point with Terry. If it were anyone else, I think there's a bigger discussion, but it's a wide receiver who helps out your quarterback, who's also the face of the franchise, who is most beloved of anybody in the fan base. You didn't have to do this.
What happens if Debo has a really good year? You said last segment this idea maybe, I mean, he's more of a Peters guy than McLaurin is. Peters had him in San Francisco, mm-hmm. traded for him, brought him here. You can only tag one guy, right? They're the same age. I mean, I don't think they're paying Debo. Certainly, he's not as durable as Terry McLaurin, huge money. But my point is, there is a path if you were to sign McLaurin to tagging Debo if you wanted to do that. I don't think they would pay both huge money. But the McLaurin money wouldn't kick in massively in year one of the deal if you didn't want it to. And then you could have him and Debo at a semi-reasonable total rate when Debo's making like $28 million or whatever it is on the tag. My guess is one of the two will be here, and it's almost certainly going to be Terry on the tag. But is there not a difference between him willingly being happy to be here and being Terry McLaurin, happy-go-lucky leader in the locker room, and just begrudgingly playing here? Because that's the argument everybody makes, including myself and Danny, every single day. Eventually, he's got to show up and play football. He's got no choice. But showing up and just begrudgingly playing football, it might be a little bit different in trying to win you football games than getting paid and being rewarded and feeling, what are the words he used at Eastern Motors? Valued, you know, like they care about you. So let's open up the phones on this next. 800-636-1067. You heard from Chris Canty. You heard from Dan Orlovsky. The question is on Peters in the front office. Are you supportive of this as it drags on, as they hold their ground against the most popular player on the team? 800-636-1067. Do you have any mounting frustration? I feel like we've talked about this so much from the McLaurin side of things and how you feel about how he's conducting himself. Mm-hmm. What about Peters, who is batted close to 1,000. You know, you heard the Orlovsky point saying before Terry McLaurin, you know, but basically before last year, Terry McLaurin was the only reason that fans had to cheer. Well, if you're Adam Peters, you go, I wasn't here for any of that, buddy. I've been here 1 year. We won an NFC playoff game in round one against the Bucs. We won another one against the Lions. We got to the NFC championship game. I got a great situation for him with an elite quarterback. If he doesn't want to do that at $24 million a year, then he can go somewhere else. Grant and Danny on the fan.